I heartily endorse this event or product.
Ahoy, hoy, everybody, and welcome to Talking Simpsons, where we blind our opponents with luxury. I am your host, Bob Mackie, and I hate the sea and everything in it. And this is the Laser Time Podcast Network's chronological exploration of The Simpsons. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and records from that era are spotty at best.
Who else is here?
Smart, beautiful, and a liar, Chris Antista.
The perfect woman, and today's episode is Bart's girlfriend.
Class, I want you to welcome back our prodigal son.
What's prodigal mean?
And today's episode aired on November 6, 1994, and as always, Chris will tell us what happened on this mythical day in real-world history.
The unforgettable sci-fi franchise that launched 1,000 spin-offs is number one at the box office, and I needn't even tell you what it is. George Foreman becomes the oldest heavyweight champion at the age of 45, and a little franchise called Donkey Kong Country launches on the Super Nintendo.
Wow, man. Wait, what is that movie?
Exactly.
Stargate.
Damn, Bob.
Really?
Whoa, yes,
wow.
It's totally Stargate.
My smart-ass answer was right. I can't believe it.
My God.
Do yourself a favor and Google Stargate spin-offs and introduce yourself to a world you never knew existed.
There is more footage of Stargates than there is for, like, The Matrix.
Yep.
And
Star Wars.
Star Wars!
There are more spinoffs than Law & Order and CSI combined.
Yeah.
I choose to view them as a MacGyver alternate universe, where MacGyver finds Stargates and, you know, antics happen.
We talked about it. It was actually funny on 302010. Mm-hmm. I wasn't on one of the two episodes, but two episodes in a row, the last episode airs in 2007, and then 1997, the show premieres of regular Stargate, not even the spinoff Stargate Atlantis.
Not even the board games and extended universe.
People have
mentioned Donkey Kong Country because I feel like I've neglected games the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
This is like the most exciting year for video games ever.
94, yeah.
Super Metroid, Doom 2 has just come out.
Final Fantasy 6.
Sonic and Knuckles?
Mother 2 in Japan.
Yeah, it's insane. I feel like I neglected my post in the news by not mentioning it.
Well, Donkey Kong Country was a huge, huge deal. It kept the Super NES alive in America probably an extra 2 years.
Killed the Genesis. I mean, the Genesis still stood strong, but it definitely made the SNES the winner of the console wars by tricking people into thinking they snuck a CGI workstation into their Super Nintendos.
Well, and the Genesis killed itself, I'd say, too, in 94. They're like, we need 17 different systems.
Yes,
we don't need just one.
Let's fool the
32X just launched.
Yes.
Ooh. In 1994. So that's maybe it's because I was mad woke during that point, but I think 94 was the craziest years in video games.
Yes, like Jaguar, CDI, 3DO, just anything could happen.
Competition all over the place, and a bunch of great franchises launch and get new entries. Hi.
And the George Foreman grill probably made George Foreman richer than any boxing fight.
George, call in Van Help.
All of his family of Georges profited from that.
That's one of my favorite jokes on 30 Rock. Is when Tracy Jordan reveals he has like two sons named Tracy named after him, and then his third is George Foreman.
Yep.
And there was
I think five kids named George Foreman.
Five. That's amazing.
That's not a joke.
That's kind of, there's loving yourself, and then there's, you just go a little too far.
Yes,
you know?
Like I'm creating an army of future me's, and there was a great episode of King of the Hill, actually, where it was like Hank Hill squaring off against George Foreman in terms of grilling techniques.
Whoa.
Yes, it's great. And speaking of King of the Hill, the writer of today's episode, Jonathan Collier, is amazing. I'm looking at his IMDb history and everything like that. He was a key figure on King of the Hill. Start with the Simpsons stuff. He wrote episodes like The Springfield Connection, Marge Becomes a Cop, Lisa the Iconoclast, that's the Hans Sprungfeld episode, Curse of the Flying Hellfish, the Grandpa episode, World War II episode, and before that he wrote for David Letterman, and after The Simpsons he went on to be one of the key figures in forming King of the Hill.
Yes, he left The Simpsons in 1997 to work on the first season of King of the Hill with Mike Judge and Greg Daniels. Like Greg Daniels worked with Collier on these seasons of The Simpsons, and I think he knew a good guy when he saw him and took him on. Mm-hmm. And Jonathan Collier worked on King of the Hill for 10 seasons.
Amazing, yeah.
And he wrote the episode Husky Bobby, which was the one we saw live.
Yeah, we saw the entire cast read it in San Francisco. Amazing. That made me want the show to come back immediately.
And the only
rumor is that it might.
Oh, God, I want it.
I bet it will. Those reunion things, mm-hmm. every time a festival hosts a reunion type thing like that, they all walk away from it like, hey, we should do more of these. Mm-hmm. Like, I think that if you want to love SF Sketchfest, you should love it just for that, of like, they will pay everybody to be in the same room, and they can't, unless they all really hate each other, they can't not make a new show.
They were clearly in love with each other and also kind of drunk.
Yeah.
Especially Dave Herman.
Well, they were like, we just came from dinner, and we had a lot of fun at dinner.
Did you drink your dinner, sir?
And also, though, Collier left the show to go to Mike Judge's big show, The Good Family, which I think aired two episodes.
Out of, like, six?
They made 13.
13,
It was an animated series, so they got to animate the whole thing.
I will say, Jonathan Collier wrote one of my favorite King of the Hill episodes, Peggy's Magic Sex Feet,
which
Peggy unwittingly becomes a foot fetish model.
That's a great episode. Yes.
You take my wife's feet off your internet.
I may jerk off to those stems.
She's so sad that she's so sad. She's like, oh, I thought you just liked my feet and it empowered other women. And then the craziest thing with Jonathan Collier is that he spent the last 5 years working on Bones. Like, he was one of the lead people on Bones.
So making more money in his life, I'm guessing.
And he worked on Monk for a long time, too. So, like, mystery thing going on with him.
Monk was probably his transition into, like, oh, you proved you could run a mystery
show.
Show
me black and white footage of a World War II propaganda film and tell me it's Bones. I have no choice but to believe you.
Going to his Twitter, it's all like, well, it's goodbye to Bones, everybody. We just wrapped the last episode, and here we're at Comic-Con with the Bones crew talking about Bones. And I was like,
all
right.
I think all the Wings jokes from The Simpsons could easily be Bones jokes today.
Yeah,
you know?
Totally. I was just rewatching the third season of BoJack Horseman, and they have multiple Bones jokes in there. Mr. Peanut Butter wants to watch Bones, and then his wife is saying,
I love Bones!
It's like, I think that show's not about what you think it's about, Mr. Peanut Butter. And then he's watching a clip of the show, and they're just like, boy, you love Bones so much, we should make your nickname Bones, huh?
So the other thing we should mention before we start is the guest star in this episode.
Jesus Christ.
Meryl Streep. And I feel
the
like...
The overrated Meryl Streep, according to our president.
Oh, yes. That's right.
Yeah,
that's
very overrated.
Sad.
I trust his judgment completely. But yeah, Meryl Streep plays Jessica Lovejoy. And unlike Winona Ryder, they didn't pitch her voice up, which I felt was a smart decision. And I'm wondering, like, why did they ever pitch Winona's voice up? Was it too deep or something?
I think because she just did a straight read, whereas I can't...
She's putting on a little girl's voice.
Again, I knew this was Meryl Streep because I've read that, but I never think of her when I see the episode. It doesn't sound anything like her.
No. And I don't know, this is uncomfortable to say this, but she's like playing a sexy-ish little girl.
It's
or
fucking
like
odd now.
A little seductress, maybe.
Odd now. Chris with pubes finds this odd.
Well, even on the commentary, they're kind of talking around like, boy, this is a great design. I like this type of woman. But, well, it's a weird line that the episode draws anyway of like the Barty's going on dates. He is 10, she is 10. It's just weird even to be like, oh, a date for my 10-year-old and his girlfriend at 10. It all feels a little strange, but this is one of those episodes where you just have to expect, like, you are projecting adult relationships onto children, not pre-sexualizing children. But it's a tough line, but you know that they're in kind of a type of story of the evil girlfriend and that she's so great at it. Like Meryl, guess what? Meryl Streep's wonderful at everything.
This is a great character. And when David Merkin came to The Simpsons, he came to The Simpsons with this idea. Like, what if Bart fell in love with a woman, or a girl rather, who was more evil than him? Because David Merkin says he loves evil women. Yes. He's attracted to evil women. So he gave this idea to Jonathan Collier. And Jonathan Collier and James L. Brooks basically sat in a room and broke the story down before he wrote it. And he said that was like one of the most amazing experiences in his life. A young writer being asked to work with James L. Brooks to sort of figure out a story.
That's amazing. Well, and listening to the commentary, there's some revealing mentions of their own personal relationships where, like, David Merkin, who has apparently never been married, he's just like, I can never find a girl evil enough for me. And then meanwhile, Matt Groening says, well, you know what you should do is find a nice girl and then annoy her enough until she's mean.
Yeah, try gaslighting Ann Coulter. You should be fine.
Well, Matt Groening also was speaking of a divorce. Like, he went through a divorce during the show.
That's right.
But anyway, back to Meryl Streep. I think Meryl Streep is just, she's one of the best actors they've ever had on the show, and she really gave herself to the performance.
She is
and
astonishing.
Knew the comedy. Yeah.
And I would only recommend Angels in America because she plays multiple roles. roles in it, and like just didn't. She's a male Jewish rabbi, like Orthodox rabbi in the movie, and I could not tell.
Really? Wow. Yeah,
and I could not tell, and this is yet. Other than that, this is like no idea. Yeah. No idea watching the episode. Who is this? What the fuck?
I heard an amazing story about her from just a recent thing of like, I would not forgive her at her age to be like Robert De Niro of just going like, I just coast. I'm Robert De Niro. Yeah. I don't need to try. But this story was from Diablo Cody.
Somebody poop on my head in a PG-13 comedy.
Sell a Strepacino.
But Diablo Cody was talking about the movie she just made with Meryl Streep, Jenny and the Rockets or whatever. The one where she's playing...
the rock star.
Yeah, the rock star one. And Meryl, she tells like, oh, we hired Meryl Streep. And Meryl's like, well, I need to take a month off to learn to play the guitar. So in that movie, she's naturally playing the guitar, which no one would fault her if they faked it and just put it in. But that's Meryl Streep.
And the previous joke about Meryl Streep on the show was a parody of a Calvin Klein obsession cologne. It was called Meryl Streep's Versatility. Smell like Streep for cheap.
And meaning that she is very good.
Yes.
The joke is Meryl Streep's great. And
as this episode proves.
Yeah. And they talked about how much they love seeing her and working with her on this. And also that I think it was Bill Oakley mentioned it in our interview, but it's something I heard many times is that she had kids and the kids would love her being on The Simpsons. So she did it.
That's how you get the big stars.
So weird.
In
I don't know
90s.
Anything about Meryl Streep personally. Yeah. And maybe like I was watching Five Came Home, great Netflix documentary.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to recognize her real voice because she's so iconic.
Yeah.
So many different roles.
It's true.
And then, she's the narrator of the whole thing. And I'm like, who is this? Ah, duh.
And I also know Nancy Cartwright's book, she talked about the recording that the recording mainly was just her and Meryl. It wasn't a group thing. But normally they do solo recordings, but I think you could definitely tell the extra quality of Nancy recording the Bart lines with Meryl, and that Nancy says she was starstruck and didn't want to bother her for an autograph, but she says after the recording was over, Meryl asked her for an autograph because she's like, my kids would not forgive me if I didn't get Bart Simpson's autograph.
Great. That's great.
So every story is that of Meryl Streep is only positive and that she is the greatest.
She's no Mary Tyler Moore.
I have no idea how.
R.I.P. So yes, this episode starts off with sort of an anachronistic game of Cowboys and Indians. Cowboys and Native Americans.
Yes, yeah, and that they're doing it in the Veterans Park in honor of some veterans. And there's also like a rather dated Dances with Wolves gag.
Right.
Just like,
yeah,
we get it.
Talks too much.
And that Ralph is eating his caps, which that seems dangerous. But yes, they are playing a game.
I ate all my caps.
Throw down your weapons and kiss the prairie, cowdorks.
Oh, why do we have to play this corny old game anyway? I brought my jacks. Oh, I got twosies.
That's not fair, Nelson. They didn't have the Killmatic 3000 back then.
Hey! Records from that era are spotty at best.
Yeah, Milhouse shows up and nerfs them all. Nelson shows up and nerfs them all. I like how Nelson, he's a bully, but he loves getting people on technicalities. Like, you see, epidermis means your hair.
That's true. In season 6, he's a real pedant about things, too.
Those are the worst kind of bullies, actually.
Yeah, he even does it in the movie.
Yeah, that's
Say true. Global warming's a myth.
Yeah, you're right.
Study is needed.
I like that. It makes him different from Jimbo will just punch you. Those guys have no brains.
Nelson hits you with facts.
Yeah, and I like that I never had a Nerf gun that actually hurt people, but those things they're not supposed to hurt people, but Bart just falls over getting hit
with that little ping pong ball.
Yeah, and great sound by Nancy there. And then also those caps, like I was afraid to have a cap gun as a kid because they made too much noise. They like scared me.
It's actual gunpowder, and that's what that is. I can't believe they
so
still
dangerous.
Sell them.
Yes, well, especially now, kids have been literally killed by the police for playing around with a toy gun. So I feel like cap guns are not as popular now.
No.
One of the most traumatic things I can remember as a little kid, we were born right before the mandatory orange tip on guns.
Mm-hmm.
We all had gray zappers, I think.
But
like I was had a cap gun and I was firing it, and an old man was walking down the street at my friend's house, and I pointed it towards him, and he just fell to the ground.
Jesus.
And like
the children are armed.
I'm 7. And he was like, never, ever, ever do that. And I told my parents about it. I'm like, yeah, you crazy? And now I'm like, You're fucking crazy.
You gave me this. Yeah.
This guy believed a kid could have a gun. What other country does that happen in?
Like, yes, exactly.
We have to move.
You're all crazy. That's not my fault.
Well, toy guns are no fun to have in a country as scared of people and guns as we are.
Well, and I want to know what that old man went through. That's the first time it came to his head. This 7-year-old is going to kill me. Yeah, I know.
Maybe.
Like, I got killed by some kids in Da Nang.
So Milhouse would rather play Jax instead of that corny old game. And I remember I had the same experience, kind of like the reverse experience of Milhouse, actually, where I would see people play Jax in old cartoons and old TV shows and movies and stuff. I didn't know how you actually played.
Yeah,
and we got them as like a party favor at a birthday party when I was a kid. And I tried, like, this sucks. Yeah, like, Jax are awful.
No one bought solo Jax. You always got to have been like poppers or like those Christmas poppers.
Yeah, or in those birthday party, like, fun packs so all the other kids can
get. You're supposed to bounce the ball and pick up one Jack at a time, then play again, bounce the ball and pick up two before the ball can hit the ground.
And then
again.
Swallow all of them.
Yes, and then feed them to your cats.
Well, that shows you how bad Milhouse is at it, that he celebrates, like, twosies, which is just, like, that's the second worst thing you can do at it. Like, you're supposed to get twosies. And I think, too, it's a joke that Milhouse would want to play that I think Jax is seen as a more feminine game. When I looked up rules for Jax, all the descriptors were, and then she will pick up the ball, and her will... I think it's a non-gendered game.
I think it's a lame old game.
Yes, yeah.
That really needs an anime. And then, some guy spiking the ball like 900 feet in the air.
Oh, man, competitive Jax anime? Yeah. Yes. Chris, we got to pitch this to somebody.
Please.
Get TMS on the phone.
Crunchyroll is just down the street. I think we got a chance there. I've said... records from that era are spotty at best. I've said that so many times. It is such a great comeback to people like, those are spotty at best. Like,
when do we get to my favorite part
of this? Well, okay, then I don't have the sound for it because it's just the music.
It's just the music. And
it's beautiful.
It's as of this recording... R.I.P. Alf Clausen?
Well, he's not dead, but
he's not dead, but his career is.
It's in a shifting position. We are recording this, let's say, 4 days before this goes live on Patreon, but as of this recording, Alf Clausen just got fired from The Simpsons, in his words, and then meanwhile, The Simpsons producers say, no, he's transitioning to a different role. He will have a, quote, ongoing role in the show, which to me says... they're trying to fix a bad PR thing of getting rid of him. And I think he's not doing original compositions anymore. That's why
I do watch the recent shows. It's part of one of my problems with it. Those flourishes of music don't happen very often. And and at this point, when they do, you should have an archive to go to. But this, my time to shine. This is a Planet of the Apes, very specific Planet of the Apes reference.
Yeah.
And I remember we talked about when the Burns head on the robot and the barking Smithers dog, people were like, that's Planet of the Apes. No, it's this exact same musical theme.
The music,
that they, but it's more, it's slightly evocative of Jerry Goldsmith's Planet of the Apes score, but not really. That thing is just like, ooh.
Yeah.
It's a great Planet of the Apes sequence because it's something I don't think I got for years. Because if you hadn't seen the movie, it's a very specific sequence running through the cornfields.
Yeah, in 94 I had seen it, so I could recognize it. And I love how directly they do it of just like, no, the children are put in nets, they are put in chains and collars.
And Kirk Van Houten has a horse.
Yeah.
Yes.
Beating him down with cattails through the cornfield. Just a wonderful sequence in the opening of Planet of the Apes.
And it's just amazing that Alf Clausen could you make a Simpsons-style parody of the Planet of the Apes theme for this
but
scene.
But we don't have to have a Cape Fear-style argument because it's not that close to anything in the original.
Yeah, but
trust the guy with four vinyl editions of the Planet of the Apes soundtrack.
You're the authority now.
Someday there'll be a video up on youtube.com/lasertime. You'll learn everything you'll ever need to know about Planet of the Apes.
Also, as a kid, though, I did not get the Jewish joke of Shlomo, time for your violin lesson. That just every Gentile is being called to church, but Shlomo has to go to his violin lesson. And it is the old Jewish man voice as well that Hank Azaria does.
Not the crazy Jewish man, I hope. But I love this episode. Don't. This episode resonated with me as a kid because I was knee-deep in Catholic school. And this episode is bashing Christianity left and right. I love the sort of the smash cut from Marge saying, you kids need to go to church to learn about morals and values, and immediately it's this horrifying account of people getting their eyes gouged out and other people feeding from the blood or the gore. Not a real Bible quote, by the way, but fucked up stuff happens in the Bible all the time.
Oh, yes, yeah. Well, I love when people say, they quote Leviticus to say, like, well, the gay should be killed. It's like, you can't do anything in Leviticus.
You can't eat a cheeseburger.
Yeah, like, your life is... Leviticus has a lot of time dedicated to how do you properly slice up a goat after killing it. Just
technically,
like,
we can't even go to the bathroom.
Yeah, so... Oh, I meant to mention, too, when they're getting caught by their parents, I appreciate the continuity from the animators. Nelson's dad is Nelson's dad from the last scene in the Peppy episode.
Oh, okay.
The one who's like, my son will go to... The winner is Nelson. Thanks, Dad!
Pele's acting in soccer camp?
Yes, that's right. That's right. And... Marge is a real scold for the first few minutes of this episode. Then she pretty much drops it. But
she's anti-troll.
Like, yeah, well, yeah. I can't believe that she... It's a funny visual of her looking at the troll like, awful, awful hair. It's like, this is not the Marge of the show who's this much
Do you want me to tell you everything you've ever heard
about
troll dolls?
I want to know about troll dolls, yes.
It's a great camera angle first, though, with her, like, giant hair pulling
her
back
hair
from the camera.
The hair,
it is a highly...
I'm a troll, man.
It's a highly trendy doll, mm-hmm. but it's distinctive in that it has had multiple trends. It has been... white hot trendy three times since the 1950s.
Yeah, this is sort of a 70s throwback when they were talking about trolls in this era of The Simpsons, right?
Yes.
I remember in school having troll dolls.
Yeah, 1992, I think the troll craze was in full swing. Mm-hmm. I have a dumb commercial from
Ooh,
it that's
let's
super
hear it.
Boring.
I wish my violin was an electric...
Oh my god, I remember this.
I wish my jungle gym was really a jungle.
When you wish on a treasure troll, who knows what might happen?
I hate having done this much research. It was created by a Danish woodworker who couldn't afford to get his kid a toy. His last name was Dam, so he created a company called Dam Things.
Wow.
They still are the licensors of trolls over there. But like, it was popular in Europe in the 50s, all over the place in the late 60s, early 70s. Became popular again in the mid-90s. Mm. And if you're our age, the trolls had to have...
Treasure trolls are the only trolls that have a jewel in their tummy.
They have to have a jewel in the tummy. That
so
was
you know the wish
tool.
Works.
But these things were fucking everywhere. Yes. Oh, they're old ones or new ones. And there was a 2016 movie with Justin Timberlake.
Yes.
His DreamWorks bought the almost worldwide rights to the troll doll.
I forgot about that movie. Yeah. I remember those jeweled trolls, and it made them different from old trolls.
Yes, that's how you knew you had a new one, under a decaying piece of plastic. And if I really must punish animation fans, they
I was
going to
bring this up, Chris. Thank you.
I did have a 1992-93 cartoon show, Magical Super Trolls, the worst theme song ever.
They're for boys too, you know.
Magical Super Trolls, who are these beehive wonder workers? Some call them skips, we say they're chips.
Yuck.
They didn't even animate. They didn't make new animation for the opening.
The opening's a clip show, so you know you're in trouble. Actually, Chris, what I was thinking of, I don't know if there was a cartoon. I think there was, but there was a video game called Stone Warriors, and they're like, trolls are dying. Let's get boys in the trolls. So they were sort of like
make
Ninja
Power
Turtles.
Rangers.
If you've ever heard of the game Dudes with Attitude, it is a reskin trolls game.
Ah, I see.
That cartoon is presented by Russ, the toy line. So many people have distributed troll dolls, and they have a distinctive look. All I'll say about it, do yourself a favor, Google Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle trolls, because they got them too in the mid-90s. And you want to smother it to death before seeing it again.
But what do you do? You blow on their hair to make a wish or
I
whatever?
I think so. You pull back their hair and you make a wish. That's how I remembered it anyway. Or you stick your tongue in their butt.
Yeah, I just thought it was funny as a kid to have like, I have a toy with a butt on it. No, my toys don't normally have naked butts. That's funny.
Yeah. I didn't see the movie, but I bet they don't have the balls to have naked trolls.
I highly doubt that. I think too that was one of those like the Europeanness of it, that they're just like, in Europe they don't care if you have a naked troll toy, they just hand it to you, which I like. And but so then we get, I also like that this episode gets straight to it. They're like, no, here is Jessica. They don't waste a lot of time on other stuff. And
much like us.
Yeah.
Great 10-minute discussion on troll dolls.
I think you can see the James L. Brooks influence and just how well told the story is, just how great the beats are in the story.
No time is wasted.
No
need for a beat story either.
I love that too.
It is a real sitcom trope, but they make it work in this too, of just like, Lovejoy is a character you've seen since season one, but now he's finally like, and I also have a child, by the way. Like, he's got a wife. It would be weird if the minister didn't procreate.
I'm glad they treated it this well, because as a kid, you know, I'd kind of fantasize about Simpsons plot lines, and Bart getting a girlfriend was something I had thought of. Mm-hmm. But if they hadn't done it in six seasons, it needed to be special. No B plots. get a great, like, Elizabeth Taylor-esque guest star.
Right. He couldn't date Laura Powers.
Yeah.
No, I think now...
God, that'd be hot.
I think now he's had 8 girlfriends at this point.
Yeah.
I know he had Sarah Silverman and Rhaemar Wolfcastle's daughter, which then turned into an episode where they go to Canada. And apparently, when we called another clip show the worst episode ever, somebody mentioned to me an episode I had no idea happened where Bart technically impregnates a 15-year-old who has... I have no fucking clue.
Oh,
like,
God.
It's apparently really happened.
We'll get to it before we die.
But yes, it's love at first sight for Bart.
And now my daughter Jessica, who has just returned from boarding school, will read the same passage I just read. I noticed a few of you weren't paying attention.
Is a god.
I'm telling you, the light would work better if it pointed out to sea.
Dar, shut up. Yeah. I know what I'm doing. Dar, I hate the sea and everything in it.
A dumb joke saved by my favorite line of the entire show.
Yeah. That's great. I also get a little bit of the runner joke, sort of, where somebody points something out to a character, they just say, shut up!
Shut up! Yeah.
Except they didn't end with shut up, which is great.
It was a very Merkin-y thing of, like, shut up. I love that McAllister hates the sea, but also that he's very callously murdering people. Like, well, those people who crashed that boat are dead.
He's a restaurant manager. He's not a sea captain.
That's also
he's
true.
Way out of his league.
And he has 2 glass eyes. So
that's true.
It's, there's a lot to deconstruct with old Captain McAllister there, which is his name. It is not sea captain. It is Captain McAllister.
Horatio?
I believe it is Horatio.
I think so.
Yes. Yeah. And as a kid, I didn't really get this. But now, as an adult, the idea of putting yourself out there to say you're to introduce yourself to somebody you're attracted to and being immediately shut down, it's so real and painful, this scene.
Yep.
Hi, I'm Bart Simpson. I was incredibly moved by your reading. I don't think God's words have ever sounded so plausible.
Thanks, Art. I have to go over here now.
I just love that. Thanks, Arts. And then just takes 2 little steps to turn her back to him. And just that, I like back to back too that Bart says there is a God while he's in church, so obviously he doesn't believe. And then to say he'd never thought it sounded so plausible, again being like, no, church is bullshit. Like, I'm at church because my family made me come, but it's dumb.
He could possibly buy into religion if Jessica was spouting it.
If a pretty face said it. But, and also the ADR line is good, but it's I think it's because they realize it'd be weird if Bart was just walking silently towards her, but my long search is finally over, which is funny for a 10-year-old to say.
Yes, and actually, right after this, we get a scene of Bart in agony in the living room talking to Lisa, or maybe in the bedroom or whatever, and this really reminds me of King of the Hill. Like, Bart is a little Bobby Hillish in this episode. He's never been more wounded or more sensitive in putting himself out there. Like, I can see how Jonathan Collier could bring this sort of attitude to Bobby Hill in King of the Hill.
Self-aware as a cartoon character.
That too, yeah.
Yeah, and it does remind me of how a little bit of just how Bobby works with, like, Con Jr. And also the episode where Bobby, I think it was when he was dating Sarah Michelle Gellar.
A vegetarian.
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Oh, we got to do King of the Talk?
King of Talk in the Hills.
Talk in the Hills.
We'll work on it.
We'll still workshopping that. But I think Lisa in general is great in this episode because an episode about an evil woman could easily fall into a lot of bad places of, aren't women all crazy? Like, isn't everybody a crazy bitch or whatever? They could easily fall into
perfect
that.
For Bart.
Removing the sex angle from that kind of dynamic makes this less sexist. In fact, I don't even think this is a sexist
episode at all. I don't. And it's also directed by Susie Dieter, who the only woman director at the time. And I think she probably... maybe she helped a little bit with that in just characterization and acting on her.
Yeah. I mean, I think all Jessica wants out of Bart is the chance to make more mischief and be shielded from any sort of responsibility.
Yeah, but I like that Lisa gets to be kind of a sounding board and be like, no, I agree this woman is bad, or this girl is a bad person, and I'm a good person. And but so Bart thinks that he's too bad for her, thanks to what Lisa says. And so he decides to go back to Sunday school.
Yeah.
So it's the return of the Sunday school teacher.
Does she have a name?
Miss Albright. I had to look it up. I don't know when she was named that.
They said it once, and I don't know when, but it was an early episode.
But this is the first time we've seen her since Homer's triple bypass.
Wow.
The line of, like, you get to do whatever you want most in heaven. And I also like the continuity of the Ten Commandments are still in the classroom, which I feel like in a Christian... That's so Old Testament-y. I still feel like in a Christian school, it'd be a bunch of Jesus stuff, not the Ten Commandments.
You'd be surprised. Some people demand it in their courthouse.
No, yeah, that's true. That is, I was wrong. And that's also where we got the opening line of the prodigal son returning.
Yes, I found that funny because that is like the one story you tell to every kid in Catholic school. And it's like the most used story. It's all about forgiveness.
It's about forgiveness, yeah. Actually, I read it up here. The prodigal son is from Luke 15, verses 11 through 32. It's a story Jesus tells, but it's about an old man with two sons. The younger son leaves and wastes all of his money and then comes back home while the elder son stays and works on the place. And when he returns home, he thinks his father is going to shame him. And instead, his father welcomes him back in open arms.
He has to forgive him or his God will punish him.
Putting you on all Bible research from here on out. I'm doing none of that.
I didn't like reading
it. I didn't have to look that story up, Henry.
I
knew the whole thing.
Well,
I could have told you.
I do think this is a very good interpretation of at least the Sunday schools I briefly went to as a kid. Like the smaller class size, your own personal desk, drawing Jesus and maybe putting wheels on him.
Yes, he did not have wheels.
And the sign joke that the Sunday school is established 1 A.D. was a cute joke.
And basically, the perfect scenario for Bart to be bad is set up where he gets a replica of David's sling, but it's not a sling, it's a slingshot in this case. And this just shows Bart cannot resist attacking a giant adult ass. We saw Chalmers, his giant ass got attacked.
Yep.
Seymour Skinner, his giant ass got attacked with a tomato. Exactly. And
Season 7's Team Homer, he will do the same thing, to corrupt Apple's ass. His school uniform prevents him from doing it.
And I really like them hanging a lantern on this perfect scenario for Bart. Like, I'll just busy myself in this filing cabinet. Just like, I'll find something to do in here.
Just to stay still forever. Yeah, I love this line.
You know, the great thing about Sunday school is we're finally learning something we can use.
Yeah, so true. I have to turn my chair this way now.
Somehow I gotta convince her I'm a good person. All right, I have to sit here and behave no matter what.
Okay, class, we have a special treat today for pass around. A replica of the slingshot David used to slay Goliath. While you kids are looking at that, I'll just busy myself in this file cabinet.
Oh, that's great.
Must fight Satan. Make it up to him later. You know, I was considering staying after school and helping teacher clean up.
Do you ever think anything you don't say?
Oh,
it's such a great shutdown. Do you ever think anything you don't say?
It's the story of every one of my courtships. But to Bart's credit, like, just didn't give up. You shut me down, I'm out of town.
Well, once she sees the true Bart is when she realizes she can use him. I mean, like him. It also is such a dweeby thing to say of, like, helping teacher clean up.
He even, like, sort of infantilized his delivery of that, you know, like sounding like a very little kid.
It's really creepy.
Like a goody-goody. Yeah.
And, well, I love that he can't stand being good that long, and he has to even, like, rub dirt on himself.
I'm all tense in my chestal region.
Chestal area. Which I was trying to look for the specific commercial that would be from. I couldn't really find one, but it was definitely...
It feels like a Jerry Lewis-y sort of phrasing. My chestal area.
Okay, see, I saw it as, like, those 80s and 90s commercials that just has somebody sitting down, like, my sinuses are so tense, and I feel all this fatigue in my chestal area. Well, you know what you need is Excedrin, or, like, Anacin, or the... I remember the two... Well, it's forever immortalized in Wayne's World, but I definitely remember the ads of, like, these two yellow pills. Just perfect.
Little yellow. Different.
Yeah.
The Simpsons will be right back.
Hey,
Hey, this is Hank Azaria. You're listening to Talking Simpsons on Laser Time. I didn't know that was a thing.
Bart comes upon Scotch-toberfest, which I love this so much.
Oh, this joke is so good.
No, the kilt was only for day-to-day wear. In battle, we donned a full-length ball gown covered in sequins. The idea was to blind your opponent with luxury. Ah, there's no more than what God gave me, you Puritan pukes.
That'll hold me. At least till I get my hands on some kind of explosives.
Congratulations, Simpson. You just fell for our sting and won yourself 3 months' detention. There's no such thing as Scotch-toberfest.
There's not... You used me, Skinner! You used me!
Oh, just so great by Dan there, the screaming up.
It is
yeah,
great.
Yo!
I think you can see the writers falling in love with Willie.
Yeah, just like Burns. And if you look at Skinner during that You Used Me scene, he looks kind of sad. Like, oh boy, I went too far.
It does feel bad. Like, that's great animation there. I don't know. I wonder if the animators or the writers were just like, oh, Skinner should feel bad that Willie...
I mean, they went out of their way to make the most supple ass in Simpsons history.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Groundskeeper Willie.
Well, Groundskeeper Willie, he keeps it pretty fit and tight in general, so you would definitely think his butt would be in good condition.
It's very toned.
I wonder what he's working with from the other side, though. It made that woman pass out, so I wonder if it's big time.
I bet it looks like an albino elephant over there.
I think like Springfield Elementary's budget is being wasted on this team of Secret Service agents for Skinner. The guy dresses up as a tree and grabs Bart, and they pop out of bushes with like them strapped to their heads with guns.
It's so weird seeing all those guns pointed at Bart too. And yes, there is no such thing as a Scotch-toberfest until there was. In 2001, New Orleans started a real Scotch-toberfest, but it's really all about drinking scotch. It's just about the celebration of the alcohol of scotch. So not even a celebration of Scottish culture, which you think at Willie's Scotch-toberfest they'd be doing caber tosses, you know?
Eating haggis.
Haggis. Good for what ails ya. 3 months detention, too, is not a lot to give Bart for what he did. And I also like when... I like to imagine that when Willie is screaming, "You used me," he is still bottomless.
Yes,
like
his penis is still flapping in the wind.
Yes,
Was 3 months detention what Skinner originally gave Bart in The Boy Who Knew Too Much?
Yeah, and then he made it 4 months.
Yeah,
three months
seems to be the standard Bart punishment.
Yeah, it's where he starts from. And I said it over, but that was Mission Impossible music there. And so then Jessica saw that happen, and she doesn't exactly say it's because I'm mischievous, but this is obviously when she realizes she wants to be with Bart when she sees him be this evil.
I saw the way they set you up. That was really unfair. Want to have dinner at my house tonight?
Really? Sure.
Great. We eat at 7.
There's only one thing to do at a moment like this. Strut.
It's real music there.
Great animation, Susie Dieter.
Yes,
this is a great looking episode.
So, that reference, it is a Saturday Night Fever reference because that music is the song Bee Gees Stayin' Alive, played over the iconic opening scene of John Travolta strutting down the street, all excited and so 70s.
Talked about this off mic. You're totally right about it, though.
So, what people don't know is that there was a sequel to it in 1983.
Directed by Sylvester Stallone.
John Travolta is in the greatest shape of his life.
It is the gayest movie I've ever seen.
Yes.
He's so gorgeous.
He's in the gayest shape of his life, too.
Well, it's so crazy, too, that like Sylvester Stallone, his films are not known for their homoeroticism. Even his workout scenes, they're taking place
on separate continents.
Yes, and to me as a gay man, I don't particularly feel like sexual interest in seeing the dudes work out. Well, that's not totally true. In Rocky III, when they are hugging in the water together, that's pretty...
As a straight man, I'm all over that.
But somehow when you put that training montage stuff through the lens of John Travolta, it gays it up. But he's in amazing shape in this. And so in the film Stayin' Alive, his character goes to Broadway and wants to be a professional dancer.
Okay.
No. and he makes it. But he, at the end of the movie and in the final dance sequence, he breaks from what they're supposed to do and does an incredible dance, and everyone applauds him and they're like, you did it. And
you truly are the greatest dancer.
And he gets back together with his girlfriend, and so the movie is over. He's like, he is so satisfied. He just kissed his girlfriend, and there's only one thing to do at the end of the movie.
You know what I want to do?
What? You know what I want to do?
What?
Strut.
And then it's just him strutting.
Good way to end the movie. To end the movie with a callback to the iconic intro of the original.
Well, and the name of the movie is Staying Alive, which is the song, and it's also.
So, no balls on me.
But it's also amazing to look at, just as this is what Times Square looked like in 1983.
I love old New York.
That ending would be weird if you took the music away, that he's clearly not hearing. He's just like, I'm going to strut. He walks away silently. Like, what's his problem?
Like, wait, and his girlfriend doesn't follow him.
No,
by the way.
He's just like, I want to walk away alone.
Yes. That's amazing.
So that was
Pizza Place closes in 5 minutes.
but Stayin' Alive was, actually did make a profit, but it's famously a bad, bad movie. And so that's what they were referencing there with the strut. If you it's a great bad movie to watch together if you want to watch it. And I also found out half of the soundtrack is Bee Gees. Yep. The other half is Frank Stallone.
Dr.
Disco, I believe, is one of the tracks.
He's great on Twitter, by the way. Yep. Follow Frank Stallone for all of your political updates.
So again, that is explaining this reference properly. It is not exactly Saturday Night Fever. It is a reference to a Saturday Night Fever reference.
It's in the Fever verse.
I want to go back to the way Meryl Streep says her lines there, like the way Jessica says, she talks like a 90s kid in a way. I feel like it's an affectation. Streep is like, that was really unfair. Like, there's a tiny bit of Valley Girl in
her voice,
yeah.
which
I really like. And but also, it's a very forced, arched way she's doing it, of knowing, like, that was really unfair. Like, she knows what she's saying. Like, it is a very manipulative way she's saying
it. That's a great reading, and it fools Bart.
Who know that Streep is a great actress?
I'm sure she invited Bart to dinner just to get a rise out of her parents, because she knows, like, he can't resist being bad.
Yeah, well, and Lovejoy can't not know. Reverend Lovejoy already knows Bart.
Yes.
He knows Bart is bad. But then we get a cute scene, which is also the rest of the references clips that I'm going to have to play, but it's three back-to-back here.
I can't believe my little boy is already going on his first day. Sunrise, sunset, sunrise, sunset. Cats in the cradle and a silver spoon. Yes, we have no bananas.
Oh, that's sweet, Homer. Our son is growing up, isn't he?
No, it's not that. Didn't you hear? They have no bananas. They have no bananas today.
That really reminds me of the scene from Secrets to a Successful Marriage, in which Homer goes through like four movie references in the course of a conversation.
Yes.
Just mixing them all up.
And I think it would almost be a lame joke in some shows to be like, that he thinks that the song We Have No Bananas is about how people have no bananas, and it makes him sad as a fat guy. But Dan Castellaneta's acting of the crying and the tears, like, have no bananas today.
Didn't you hear?
But all right, so those three songs back to back, just for the record. The first one is for Fiddler on the Roof, Sunrise, Sunset, which is takes place during a wedding, and it is the parents reflecting on, where is the little girl I cared for? So it is a fitting song for Homer to think about a child growing up. But here's the Sunrise, Sunset part.
Sunrise, sunset, sunrise, sunset, swiftly flow the days.
So that's where that one is from. Then I barely even need to play it. It is the classic Harry Chapin song, Cats in the Cradle, again about...
I hate this song.
Well, let's give it a listen real quick here.
And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon, little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, daddy, don't know when, but we'll get together then.
What What's your problem with this song, Bob?
It's corny.
Yes, it is corny.
It's
but,
corny as hell.
But if you're a father...
Yeah, it's become synonymous with a father.
Yeah.
Fetishizing a son. I don't know.
Well, and also a guilt. It's about fatherhood guilt of like, no, I work too hard, and but I miss you. I wish I...
I just think father-son relationships are bullshit in general. You don't need them.
Yeah.
They're off the table.
I just heard this song used beautifully... If you haven't watched the entire show, Delocated, this is a spoiler for Delocated, but...
Oh, I love Delocated.
On the final episode of Delocated, the main character is brainwashed to murder his son, and does murder his son.
I haven't seen this.
He strangles his son to death on camera.
Wow.
And they play this song. They paid for the master version of this song to play over him murdering his son.
That's probably why it only aired once, I'm guessing.
Yes, like, yeah.
This was expensive.
I mean, it was made by the Wonder Shows and guys, so it's not surprising it got that dark, but I was like, jeez. I was like, you really... It's so funny, too, because he, again, strangles to death his son, who had been on the show since the first episode, so it's then killing off a major character.
I saw a ska mitzvah.
Yeah, but then when the episode... But then... He kills him, and then it goes to commercial break. And when they go to commercial break, they just show, like, the ident for Delocated. And they put the silliest music they can on it, just, like, strangle, silence.
That's a very PFFR move.
It's beautiful. And, okay, and then lastly, we have Yes, We Have No Bananas, which here is the song from a 1923 recording. God. He's listing all
just
the other things.
Someone... Write down any thought, put it to a trombone, and you're a millionaire.
Put that in a dystopian first-person shooter.
So I don't mean to do this.
Did you?
I know it from a commercial.
Mm.
And the commercial, if it's very vague and fuzzy, and hey, contribute, talkingsimpsons.com, put in the comments. It is about a monkey who is turned down from a certain product, and it ends with "We have no bananas today."
Oh.
And the monkey is turned away from whatever the product was. I can't remember what it was.
Speaking
and
of,
I have to imagine that's what Homer's referencing. Not a Victrola jam.
We brought up Donkey Kong Country earlier. I remember this song title being in magazines as like a pun or something on every Donkey Kong Country like coverage.
I hate us.
Yeah. Well, the plot of Donkey Kong Country and most Donkey Kong Country games is he loses all of his bananas.
He has no bananas.
He has no bananas. Now, apparently, the origin of this song is a hilarious joke about immigrants. It was written in the early 1920s, and it is about immigrant grocers who, because English isn't their first language, they go yes before saying anything else. Like if you ask them a question, they go like, yes, we have no bananas. Which, so it is a comedic construction of a sentence to say yes, and then you're saying, oh yes, we don't have this, instead of saying, no, we don't have this. So it is a hilarious joke about people who are ESL. And
it's funny that now all Californians say, yeah, no.
You know,
we have to say both before we start a sentence.
And but it was written by the song was written by a Jewish immigrant about Greek immigrants.
Punch down as hard as you can to rise to the top.
So those are all the three songs back to back explained. I hope you listeners have learned something there. So then,
I did have something dumb.
Okay,
there's not a clip of it. Because I obsessed over it. It's Bart at the table. Or do you have that clip?
No.
At the table where he makes... I've heard a funny thing from a young man named
Martin. Oh, I do have that. Yes. Well, so first off, I love that Lovejoy is immediately suspicious about Bart. It's a great role for Lovejoy to play of the angry dad.
Yeah.
I like that. Especially as like, what's 4 times 3? Bart has to, and then also
you can impress a lot on that scene with like he might know Bart's reputation, or I love my interpretation, he knows Homer's reputation.
That's true.
I don't want Homer's kid in my house.
Well, that they're all distrustful when he talks about like, well, in my family, they're just like, yeah, we know your family.
And they also don't like Bart's aspiration to become a rocket sled Olympic champ.
Well, I love Helen Lovejoy does her typical passive-aggressive response
to
somebody.
Well, I don't think that's real. Yeah.
And like, I didn't know that was a sport in the Olympics. And then Bart just, like, slams her back. And
oh, I love the
Bart
Martin
tries,
thing.
Okay, so yes, then we get a reference to something ribald, no doubt, from Fox.
Speaking of charming, watching Fox last night, I heard a rather amusing story. This character named Martin was feeling rather randy, and he was heard to remark...
Don't you ever come near my daughter again. Never have I heard such gratuitous use of the word butt.
Make him stop!
You're bad, Bart Simpson.
No, I'm not. I'm really...
Yes, you are. You're bad, and I like it.
I'm bad to the bone, honey.
Let's go find some fun.
Mm-hmm. But your father said...
Oh, told the Rev I was going to my room to say my prayers.
Smart, beautiful, and a liar. So much better than that Sarah Plain and Tall.
So, I love Bart classing up his language to describe a Martin Lawrence routine.
Yes, he was
feeling rather randy.
Randy. That, it was great
And
acting.
He was heard to remark, yeah.
It was great acting on Nancy, too, going like, randy.
Yeah.
Like, it's
I great. Thought we were just going to talk about Newbery Award-winning Sarah Plain and Tall
yes.
by
oh.
Patricia McCall.
Sure, yeah.
No,
let's talk about
1985 book. I feel like this is one of the many books kids are forced to read that scare them away from reading. It's just like, you like books, right, kids? Sure. How about this story about an agrarian family in the late 19th century? Dig into that.
My sister loved it. It became a series of books and I think a TV miniseries
with
Glenn Close in it.
Yeah, it's weird, too, that it is about a mail-order bride and who falls in... Well, but they have to do that thing in all stories about arranged marriages of just like, oh, but then they legitimately fall in love after he buys her. And it's a totally equal partnership, which I can tell you from extended family experience, that is not how mail order bride situations go. It is not an equal. There's little equality, if any,
no.
in those situations, in my experience.
And you're, what's
poor Sarah Plain and Tall going off crying? That is not what happens in the book. She is accepted by her family. I think the book really is about how children. You give the book to kids who need to get used to having a new parent after a divorce or
okay.
something.
Okay, sort of like how Charlotte's Web is like, hey, your aunt died. Read this.
Yeah,
it's about
exactly.
a spider who also dies.
Yeah. And so it's really about the kids
Spoilers.
Who are just like, no, this new person can't replace mom. And even if you think she will, she's never coming back because Sarah doesn't like us. And no.
I'm
no.
not calling her mom. Her name is Molly.
Yeah, exactly. But seeing them directly reference Martin was pretty funny because it was
yes.
their old time slot pal.
It was. And that's like if you watch The Simpsons in this era, it was awesome to see because to me, Martin Lawrence's show, Martin, is inextricably tied to The Simpsons. If to further drive home the point, of
Ooh.
Course, Chris brought a clip in.
Oh, boy.
And before, Danny DeVito guest stars.
Augie, hi!
And he's got a big surprise.
I bet you're all wondering what lies under this sheet.
Not really. We peeked inside while you were in the john.
On an all-new Simpsons. Then, how they got together is a love story.
Grab my ears.
But how they stay together.
Step, I want you out. Step.
Is a comedy. Martin Lawrence stars in the series premiere of Martin.
Whoa!
And how he sexually harassed her off the show is not funny at all.
Oh, no, yeah. damn, Gina. That I really sexually harassed.
But I think in hindsight, Martin is a really good show. I don't think...
Oh, yeah.
One, there weren't a lot of shows starring African-Americans, and two... This was really broad.
It was,
I think
yeah.
As I grew into teenage and surly, I'm like, this is hack. And then now it reruns on MTV2 and BET. I'm like,
he plays a drag character in the show.
He plays like 16 other
yeah,
characters.
Yeah, true.
And like, well, and
it's a very Eddie Murphy style thing.
It's awesome, and it holds up very well. And to Fox's credit, taking chances on shit like that and putting it after The Simpsons, which shouldn't have the same audience, but it did. We all watched Martin.
I did.
Because it came on after The Simpsons.
Totally.
And on August 27, 1992, it started after The Simpsons.
I had to... Usually the channel would be changed in my house. But sometimes I would watch Martin, and I'd definitely see the commercials, but maybe it was a person in the house who didn't want to watch Martin in my house.
Well, what I tried to look up, I'm like, let me find the controversial moment that this is referencing. And in my memories of Martin, it's not very controversial. It's not... He wasn't very ribald. However, he was on Def Comedy Jam simultaneously and had a theatrical movie.
He was a filthy comedian.
And he was a filthy comedian. He got banned from SNL the year, like, right
he
around...
He cleaned it up for the sitcom, though.
Well,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah, no, he did.
Weren't going to let him.
Yeah, but there was nothing... I couldn't find anything objectionable, like anybody campaigning against the sitcom.
Right. I just remember he was just always horny on the show.
Yeah.
And maybe that's what Bart was telling.
Well,
he was feeling rather randy.
It's something I can barely get. Is it the critic that has the joke? Let's see what's on the
booty,
Fox Network.
Booty. Yeah, it's a critic.
Well, and I also like...
I watch Fox. What are you talking about?
Martin did a great thing on his show, too, that I think a lot of... Most comedians do on their show, which is just... I love... this comedian has hit it big, and they're going to use their sitcom to elevate other comedians. Like, Tracy Morgan was a recurring character on the show of this homeless scammer dude who hey, I got a bunch of watches. He'd show up at the barbershop or just be in Martin's kitchen and be like, yeah, hey, I got all this stuff I'm going to sell you. And it was funny. It was funny. And also, yeah, the actress who played Gina was really great, and it's very sad.
One of my first big mega crushes.
Oh, yeah, she's gorgeous. Campbell. And she's also in Little Shop of Horrors.
Yeah,
that's true.
Singer.
Oh, God, I love Little Shop. We're going to do a karaoke night soon, and I have got to give myself a note of, like, I want to sing, like, 3 Little Shop of Horrors songs.
I think I killed Grow For Me last time. I will give that award to myself.
Please grow for me.
So the montage after Jessica reveals her true colors to Bart, I have a feeling, and it's not just a feeling, it has to be true, that the choice to make a Pulp Fiction-style musical choice had to come much later than what was written.
Late,
because the movie just came out 3 weeks ago.
Yeah,
it could not have been written. I wonder what the original choice was. Was it Bad to the Bone? Was it another song?
I wonder if it was when the Dick Dale style music, which again, big ups to Clausen making that, that wasn't exactly the song that's in Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, it's like a style parody of it.
Yeah, it was definitely a style parody of the Dick Dale surf rock song that defines Pulp Fiction. But when that song ends, then it goes into like traditional
sweepy. Yeah.
I wonder if that was the music the entire time.
So you have like 2 theories here. One, they made a joke about a trailer.
Yeah.
If they were, it is possible you were really into Reservoir Dogs and were anxiously waiting the new Quentin Tarantino film.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I would say it's just a coincidence. There was not time to see Pulp Fiction.
I think it was a choice made in editing. Like,
it would have been like a month.
I bet
delivery.
It was a month. I bet it was the same way they do ADR. Just like, oh, that track doesn't work. Take it out.
I just think they wouldn't make a change that late.
Well, they definitely say on the commentary it is intentionally Pulp Fiction music.
Yeah.
Like,
and Pulp Fiction was white hot. So they're like, if we write a Pulp Fiction thing, people aren't going to see it for a year.
That's
and
true.
We didn't, because that was 22 short films about Springfield.
Yeah. Yeah. We just looked this up for, I forget what, maybe it was this show, that it did premiere at Cannes.
Yes.
Cannes a little while ago. So maybe a Simpsons writer was somewhere in France
maybe
seeing the movie as a premiere.
I'm with Bob. I think it was a late editing choice of just and if there was no Pulp Fiction, we would have heard a different song there. I think, but it's great, and the pranks they play are just the general mischief, not the crimes. I think Jessica is easing him into her criminal beliefs. Whenever I see a gym with a window on it, I think of them eating ice cream in front of the fat people.
So kids are still TPing stuff. What a harmless thing. What a harmless prank.
I never see TP up in trees anymore.
Me neither. But I see a ton of YouTube videos of people getting punched in the face. It's a prank, bro. Like, dude, go TP something, you horny adolescent.
Yeah, a prank is now I pretended my friend was dead scared everyone. Well, I want to point out that we've seen this episode, I think, in this room. We've probably all seen it like 30 times. We're forgetting the great twist. It's like Bart doesn't think he's nice enough to be Jessica's boyfriend, but it turns out Jessica is worse than him. That's the twist that we all sort of just internalize because we know the story
so
well.
The beautiful thing in the middle that all Bart needed to be was himself, like his
self
to attract Jessica.
Yes, but then we find out we start to see the bad side of being Jessica's boyfriend.
No way would a minister's daughter go out with you.
Oh, yeah? I'll prove it.
Hey, Jessica!
Yes? Am I supposed to know you?
Jessica, we just...
That's for besmirching an innocent girl's name!
Why?
I'm sorry, Bart. You know my parents can't find out about us. And besides, if it's secret, it's even more exciting.
I guess.
Hey, you want to go skateboarding?
Actually, I was hoping I could sit down for just a second.
Come on, it'll be fun.
Wow. Now I have the energy to do anything. Just give me 2 minutes.
Boy. Like I say, really accurate observation of what it's like to be punched in the stomach. I haven't gotten punched very much in my life. I don't know how I've avoided it. But I remember, and I think Brett Elson said this on a Laser Time or a podcast. He's like, I was a smartass to everybody, but it took someone hitting me to learn I can't just say whatever I want to people.
Yeah.
And that happened to me. It's like someone said something to me. I said the most smartass thing ever. I was like, that was really clever. Punch right in the stomach.
Yeah.
The pain wasn't as bad as going...
I don't know Woody Von Most. Yeah. So this is all,
like,
this
getting
is
all
the only comeback
I have. Yeah.
But then, I like that Nelson uses besmirch. Like, that's for besmirching on innocent girls'
name. I use besmirch because of that line.
I had 2 bullies who would just walk through the hall. Every time they'd see me walking through the hallway, they'd just punch me in the gut as hard as they could.
Ouch. Man, I more got like taps in the balls, which has the same reaction of just like not a hard punch in the balls, but like just a light tap. It's like, oh, I'm down.
It sucks. I'm not an authority on my childhood, but I think I had a growth spurt and that hurt me. That I became
Did you stand out more?
Yeah, I became an awkward person, awkward looking person, and then also if you're using prison logic. Hey, that's a big guy. If I take him down, no one will fuck with me.
Look at all the cigarettes.
Yeah. Well, and I also like the reality of in a cartoon, getting a kiss would have been like, oh, I feel much better. And Say's like, I need to. And I also just like her exasperation when he says, like, give me two more minutes. Like,
And it doesn't make you dwell on the trading physical favors for.
Yeah, it's true. It's that's the most sexual their relationship kind of gets.
The hand holding. It's all very innocent, though. You know,
it is all very innocent.
They didn't open their mouths, did they?
No, but yes. And the way it's the undercurrent of it there is just like one. She's using sex to make him do things he doesn't want to do, and then two, the if it's secret, it's even more exciting. Mm-hmm. That edge to it, and then I didn't get a ton of clips from it because it's mostly visual. But the skateboarding sequence is some of the best animation ever.
I think I watched it three times when I was rewatching this episode for the podcast. It's just amazing. I love how it escalates too. Yeah. It's very well animated. Lots of great jokes.
Wonderful silhouette where I guess they can't hurt Bart as bad as they hurt Homer and Bart the Daredevil.
Yes. Yeah, watching him bounce down the asphalt on
what
the silhouette
I was waiting
is great.
For, like, oh no, ball bearings. I'm like, dude, how do you animate ball bearings interacting with a skateboard in this universe? And
they did it.
They wisely just did a close up.
It's incredible. And it's such a Merkin-y style of increasing things of like, oh, I'm definitely going to slip on this oil. Oh no, I didn't. Okay, ball bearings. Oh no. Then oh, it's glue. Cool, it'll stop me. No glue. Then what will stop me? Then a single he makes it fine over all those things. A single sunflower seed dropped by an ant knocks him over, and then the glue comes. And I did get the clips of the glue people because I just love
that's my favorite line.
I love it.
That glue ain't going nowhere.
They're immediately answering Bart's query like the glue will save me. No, it won't.
The glue will slow me down.
Any glue leaking?
No, that glue ain't going nowhere.
Nothing's ever gonna stop me.
Oh no! There goes the glue after all!
No!
Fun, huh?
It sounds a bit like E.T.
The bubbles on that glue is beautiful. The way the bubbles explode out of that glue is so great.
And apparently Jessica made it down the hill unscathed. She must be an accomplished skateboarder.
Well, that's what I do like that about this. Like, it wasn't that Jessica wanted to hurt Bart while keeping herself safe. She also did it. She survived all those things, too.
She skates down through the glue. Oh, we missed one of my favorite jokes. It's so subtle you can barely register it as a joke. Bart is looking over the hill saying, I think it's too steep. And Jessica says, you can't trust your perception at this altitude. So she's saying, yes, we are up very high.
That was a great line. Yeah. At this altitude.
It's something that irritates me about cartoons from this era where every kid is an accomplished skateboarder. Yes, trust me, I grew up, every kid had a skateboard. Pretty much everybody sat and lied down on it because nobody knew. No one could skate like Bart.
Yeah, after I watched The Simpsons, somebody I knew had a skateboard, I stood on it and I was like, well, this is not working out for me. I'm just leaving the skateboard behind. Yeah.
Why do they let me do this?
This deck is cool and I'll put it in my room to make it look like I skateboard and then we'll just never do it. Okay, I made an executive decision and I call this the line of the show.
Totally understandable. Mm. I didn't even remember it was from this episode.
That's the joke.
Have you noticed any change in Bart?
New glasses?
No, he looks like something might be disturbing him.
Probably misses his old glasses.
I guess we could get more involved in Bart's activities, but then I'd be afraid of smothering him.
Yeah, and then we'd get the chair.
That's not what I meant.
It was, Marge, admit it.
It's a very odd and creative low-key scene just to work the parents in.
It is a great... It could go in any episode, so I didn't remember it being here.
Totally. If you didn't see Bart walk in with the cat glued to him, you wouldn't know it was from this episode. It is an easy scene to remove. It feels like a kind of scene that would be deleted in syndication just to fit in another commercial. But
Bart never really goes to Homer and Marge in this episode for advice.
And it explains why they're not involved in giving advice either. But just that Homer, is so unconnected from Bart that he, one, doesn't recognize Bart, doesn't wear glasses, has never worn glasses. Well, actually, he did in the Mindy episode. But that he also didn't get new glasses. And that also, no kid would be missing their old glasses and be worried, like, probably misses his old glasses.
I think the most alarming thing is that he knows Marge wants to kill Bart, but he's kind of okay with it. Like, we're both on the same page about smothering Bart.
It was Marge. Yeah, if the glasses line didn't come before smothering, I feel like that would be the memorable line from this.
But scene. It is. When we talk about Simpsons lexicon, Simpsons shorthand, all of you motherfuckers, if I come over here, I can't find my glasses. Probably misses old glasses. Yes. You can't say the word glasses around most of my friends.
It's a great way if you're talking about somebody having a changing mood in your life. You just be like, probably misses old glasses. It's like, did that guy quit his job? Probably misses his old glasses.
In this scene, though, but they're also eating this gray sludge. I think it's also like from Lisa's rival, Homer had leftover sugar sludge. It's very disgusting.
It's really hurting their teeth.
Though. Yeah.
Okay, so then we get into the part where now it is being established that Jessica is worse than Bart. Mm-hmm. And that is where the pretty poison references start coming in. Mostly when she's twirling the baton a little later. But in case you don't know, Pretty Poison is a campy 1968 classic starring Anthony Perkins and Tuesday Wells, where Anthony Perkins is an ex-con who just got released from a mental institution. And he is on parole. And his parole officer is watching him and seeing if he'll get into something bad. Then he meets this like perky young blonde girl who's like the captain of the cheerleading squad or whatever, and it turns out she is more sadistic than him, and she talks him into murdering her mother and becoming a killer. And it's all about the campiness of seeing this cute blonde girl played by Tuesday Weld murder people and be super evil. And the film even ends with her finding the next victim and Anthony Perkins going to jail and her getting away with it. So it's a fun little movie. I watched several clips for it and a great lengthy trailer for it on YouTube. I would look it up. I couldn't find a specific like direct scene for it. Jessica and the Tuesday Weld character aren't exactly the same, especially not in look. They're not.
No, Jessica's based on a Simpsons artist daughter.
Yes,
they couldn't get the look down. I forget which person it is.
Yeah, just her swoop of raven hair is a great like look for her, and her evil eyes, like her shifty eyes. And I also think that it's a nice touch of Jessica that she knows to make Bart's hand be the one on the fire alarm, because if they dust for prints, they're not going to find hers.
And Willie is attacked by the Wee Turtles. No one will save him. They're too quick for him.
I felt like that was a callback to just Halloween, the Treehouse episode just before, of like him failing to save
someone. I definitely conflated them and like it was. I thought the season was all about Willie getting murdered for a little while.
Willie has a lot of great bits in just this episode.
I forgot in the same episode of Scotchtoberfest is him getting the Wee Turtles were too quick for him. Somehow he's covered in turtles biting him. It's so great.
So what's up with this milk dud line?
Okay, well, let's hear it first.
I can't believe it, Bart. I'd always thought Jessica was so sweet.
She's like a milk dud, Lise. Sweet on the outside, poison on the inside.
You gotta give her up.
No, wait. Hear my plan. Put up with her for 7 more years. Then we'll get married. Once the first baby comes along, she's bound to settle down and start treating me right. After all, I deserve it.
I love that description of a toxic relationship.
Yeah.
So, which I think works no matter the gender of the person in it. This is not like just about, oh, what if a woman is a bad partner? But just the way he goes like, hey, listen to, just this, hear my plan. I'll put up with this for 7 more years, but when we have a kid, they'll treat me nice. And after all, I deserve it.
Yeah, just that denial.
That way of thinking of like, I deserve it. Like, a person who doesn't respect you now won't respect you more if you do what they want, or if you be a complete doormat.
They're projecting a few, like, adult feelings onto Bart.
Definitely.
I feel like that idea, that awful idea is like, this person's out of control, but I love them still. But once we have a baby, it'll all be fine. They'll settle down.
Yes, yeah.
I'm sure they'll be a good parent. Does not work.
But milk does.
Yes.
So,
wait, delicious.
They have the malt on the inside, right?
No.
Or the caramel.
That's Whoppers.
Oh, those suck.
Yuck.
I'm pro milk dud, anti Whopper.
Me with Whoppers, I feel like after 3 Whoppers, I like them, and then on the 5th Whopper, I'm like, ugh, sick of this malt taste.
It
tastes like rotten Easter.
Yes, it turns out chocolate and chalk, not a good combination.
But Milk Duds, okay, I have to tell you guys, in the early 90s, Milk Duds were not as good as they are now.
Ooh, they
did improve the caramel in them, but back then they were like, well, one, my mom hated Milk Duds because they did rip out a filling of hers.
Yep.
Like, they are meant to destroy your teeth.
They are technically caramel first and foremost. Mm-hmm. Their name being derived from dud... that they're not all of them are the same shape, so they're all technically rejects.
But this meant they weren't explosive.
They couldn't legally be described as coated in chocolate until recently because it wasn't. It was oil and
chocolate.
Like, yeah,
but brown oil.
But the reaction to eating a Milk Dud. You can't chew it. You think you can, but you can't.
Just don't.
So you have to suck on it until... But that's also why it feels like poison on the inside, because the experience of you suck on the Milk Dud until the chocolate is gone, and then you're just left with a very, like, not sour, but a more tart caramel. Like, it is not a very sweet caramel.
It won't dissolve fast enough, either.
No,
it feels like a choking hazard. Like, am I going to die if I swallow the wrong way?
Milk Duds are dangerous. I feel like, or they especially where back then, the caramel was not as gooey or malleable. This caramel is much better now. You kids today have better Milk Duds. So there's so many better caramel candies than Milk Duds out there.
Well, name one.
Caramello.
Okay, that's
Twix.
Right. Rolos. Yeah,
Rolo.
Okay, okay.
Rolo. Tony Browntown. Yeah. They're all great.
I was in driving through Nevada. Found a fucking huge sugar baby and wondered where they'd been my entire life.
I'm more of a Mary Jane fan. Ugh. Or a Bitto Honey.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Bitto Honey. Right.
All of the
420 Bob.
They're titanium base candies.
And then you get Lisa describing her ideal bad boy. And it was interesting to see Lisa get lost in Lost in Fantasy, which hadn't happened in a few episodes, but definitely was a Merkin-y thing.
Is this Langdon Alger?
No, I don't
think
it is.
He's a Langdon Alger type.
Yeah, well, this guy is too old to be Langdon Alger.
That's
Langdon
true.
Is a classmate of hers. This is a guy who seems like he's like 13 or 12.
Probably doesn't enjoy puzzles.
No, and he's certainly not bookish. And actually, I was going to mention it at the end of the episode, but I'll say it now. That is the kid on the bike that picks up Jessica.
Yeah,
it
of course.
It is him. This was the first time I ever noticed.
Oh, really?
It was the kid from the library.
And he's a James Dean type, right?
Yes, yeah. Totally. But that it's perfect that Lisa's
yes.
bad crush will end up with Bart's bad girlfriend. It's perfect. But I like that they show that Lisa can't, that even she is susceptible to falling for a bad person. Then we get one of the greatest fuck you jokes they ever did on the show of the calendar sequence.
Yes.
They waste like a minute of like Xing through the whole calendar like... And you're thinking, oh, 3 months have passed. And then he's like, if I could just make it through all these days. And just the circling of the X.
I always conflate this with Duffless, but they don't do a calendar joke in Duffless.
No, in Duffless it is just him going a whole month. The joke is that his hand is shaking on the last day.
And I love the squeaky marker Foley.
Yes!
Whenever they use a squeaky marker, it's so great.
And I like the very subtle joke that the itchy and scratchy calendar is so cheap it is the same picture every month.
That's from the movie, right?
Yeah.
I thought so.
That's right. It's when he's hacking him up when he can't wait for him to go through the
thing. Less a joke about the cheapness of the calendar and more of an artist saying, I'm not drawing like 13 different images that no one will see.
I feel like it. I read it as the Itchy and Scratchy Company is too cheap. And then we get a nice call back to Ned's womanly voice from Bart of Darkness.
That is disturbing.
And that, though the mouth movements are all off on Ned singing, I wonder if it was a different song at first instead of just, but it's beautiful. And then Homer's shake and bake coupon thing in the collection plate. That's cute.
They're blessed.
Yes. And then Bart is decided to break up with Jessica, and she does not take it very well.
Stealing from the collection basket is really wrong. Even I know that.
Oh, fine. You just lost your cut. I'll just take that. Everyone turn around and look at this.
What is it? A Unitarian?
Now just relax. For once, you didn't do anything wrong. Just explain yourself and everyone will understand. I
took the money? Yes, we know.
He confessed!
Okay.
Stop him! He's headed for the window!
I just love that. I took the money. Yes, we know. He confessed.
I have to say,
okay.
I have to say, I went to Catholic school, as I said before on the show. My family didn't go to church, so I had to sit through a lot of masses and not, you know, really being into
too,
it.
Yeah.
And the two highlights of any mass were one, getting up to shake people's hands. It's like I get to stand and talk to people for a second. The second
crushed.
One was seeing a huge basket of money being passed around. Like, oh, look at all that money, and just like feeling the temptation. Like, would anyone see me take the money?
But
I never did.
It's a lovely notion. That no matter how bad you are or how atheist you are, everybody knows how bad it is to steal from the collection plate because it's not about where it's going, which probably should be taxed.
Yeah, but it's an honor system.
It's the intent of the people give... I don't know. It's just one of those things. Like, no one would steal from a collection plate. It's one of those things you can still depend on.
The 90-year-old usher is not going to see you do that.
Yeah.
And that is... It's nice to establish the line for Bart. Like, a very clear, like... No, he's this is wrong.
Disrespected religion the entire time.
Yeah. He only wants to be a petty thug, not a criminal.
Yeah, and I also do love how Streep says, "You just lost your cut." Mm-hmm. Like, it's a nice little, like, sing-songy.
Such a great performance.
"You just lost your cut." And so then the entire town hates Bart, which this I love this line, too.
It's great.
Leave. Get the money from the church collection plate.
Slow down, man. Slow down.
I love that guy.
Yeah. So the first guy to yell crook was Rich Moore.
Oh.
And one of the guys coming out to shake his fist at Bart was David Silverman.
I did recognize the David Silverman, but not the Rich Moore.
Rich
there.
Moore is one of the nerds.
But this wasn't this African-American Rich Moore or white Rich
Moore? It's
the
white version of, was it Gary? No, Stu?
No, Bob, you're right. It is Gary. Doug is the one who looks like me.
Steal your money from the church collection plate. Because he'd run out of... It would have been repetitive for him to also call Bart a thief. He has to say a different thing because he's the third joke. But I also did like Homer barely paying attention to Bart, and that him not obviously telling that Bart was lying when he said he didn't know who stole it. So then we get the most direct Pretty Poison reference, where she is taunting Bart while twirling her baton.
It's great acting with the baton,
so
too.
So good.
We've got to talk.
Listen, thanks for not turning me in. That was sweet.
Well, it seems like if you really care for me, you should come forward.
Oh, don't you see? It's because I care for you that I can't come forward.
That doesn't make any sense.
All right, then I just don't feel like it, okay?
Yeah. Jessica, you're really beautiful, but you are not very nice.
Duh.
You know, with the way you're treating me, why should I protect you?
Because if you tell, no one will believe you. Remember, I'm the sweet, perfect minister's daughter, and you're just yellow trash.
Huh?
I do like the hickish read, just to underline the yellow trash.
And this is one of those weird conflicts in the Simpsons world that sometimes they refer to themselves as white, but for a joke, they will sometimes replace the white with yellow, and calling someone yellow trash instead of white trash is the joke there as well.
Yeah. Well, he wanted his skin to look its yellowest for Laura.
Yes, yeah. And that's when Lisa decides to finally help Bart. I also did love the way Jasper just pops up, Dave.
Yeah, just in the treehouse. How do you get up there?
And I think it's interesting that Bart thinks 108 IQ is impressive.
In a fifth grade reading level.
Yes, which for Bart is much smarter than him, but it's definitely not smarter than Lisa, which I think is why Lisa ultimately wins this. And I like her line of, I eat Fruit Loops for breakfast. And I like the specificity of, like, red Fruit Loops. Because those are my favorite Fruit Loops.
Fuck
as a
the
kid,
green ones.
I would save the red Fruit Loops for last. So I was like, yeah, you kids today, man, you have it bad in this case, because, like, when I first was having Fruit Loops, I remember it as just red, yellow, orange. Yep. Then green
then
came in. Yeah, and same with, Trix. I didn't want that green flavor in around my
Get
sugar.
It out of here.
Yeah.
As my dad described it, like, there used to be rules that you couldn't put that kind of dye in food. And somewhere along the line, we deregulated all that. And we got all the colors of the rainbow.
I'm sure we're all fine.
Yeah, no, we're all good.
Yellow 5 shrinks your dick.
Bart is strapped down like Hannibal Lecter in a scene reminiscent of Mr. Burns in Homer Goes to College, correct? When they're wheeling him into court?
No.
Bribing the judge?
From Monorail.
Oh, Monorail, okay.
Is when he bribes the judge. But it is a reuse of... They've already done Silence of the Lambs reference, and now in late 1994, Silence of the Lambs is 2 years old. Like, it's
3 years old. It's 91.
Oh, right. Yeah. It was 91. So, yeah, it's an old reference at this point.
That everyone has made.
Yes, yeah. I kind of wish they'd come up with a better thing than strapping
especially with how subtle all the references are across the board. Like, you really have to be a fan of Planet of the Apes or what was the other one?
Well, I mean, the really Pretty Persuasion of the or Staying Alive or Pulp Fiction, but this one was like, no, draw them like that.
No, wait, not the Staying Alive reference. That was pretty on the nose. Can't miss that one.
That's true. So, obviously, I didn't go to enough churches, but I didn't know what an offertory reading was when that's what Lovejoy introduces. Lisa is doing the offertory reading, which is the next one after it's the one to set up.
There are so many readings. There's like the homily, that thing. I don't know. Who cares?
And I do like that Lovejoy's love of his daughter makes religion take a back seat when Lisa says, "Doesn't the Bible say this?" He's like, "I'm thinking somewhere in the mind."
Yes. Judge not, lest ye be judged. Yes.
And this is great. Great acting from Yardley here when she demands everyone to confess, as well as amazing animation, especially Susie Dieter on the commentary says she's proud of it, and she should be. The camera turn from Lisa sideways to then behind her back to everybody else in the crowd is such a beautiful shot.
And yeah, and Lisa is trying to do a very Perry Mason stock lawyer scene where it's like, I will guilt the person into confessing, but Jessica has no guilt. She's evil.
There is someone among us with a guilty conscience. After much soul searching, I decided it would be wrong of me to name names. But I urge that guilty person here, under the eyes of God, to come forward, to confess, and save yourself from the torment of your own personal hell!
I smelled some marijuana smoke in Vietnam!
I was the one that canceled Star Trek!
I left my Porsche keys inside Mrs. Glick.
I am talking to the collection money thief! Only you can come forward and end this injustice! Oh, what the heck? It was Jessica Lovejoy! If you search her room, I am certain you will find the money!
To the little girl's room!
Another great mob.
I love that Lisa, in a very non-Perry Mason way, just like, yeah, forget it. It's her. Yeah. It's her. I'm going to name her.
Dr. Hibbert's wearing a stethoscope in case any audience member is like, who is that? And why would he leave his car keys in a person?
Did he insert? So I did some research on that. According to a 2013 article, up to thousands of times a year, doctors leave things in patients.
Usually like clamps and stuff.
There was a horrible story of a woman getting a sponge left in her that then grew to the size of it, filling up her entire stomach.
Boy.
It's some horrifying stuff. Well, meanwhile, I love that Skinner's big guilt in Vietnam is that he accidentally smelled marijuana smoke when everyone was doing drugs all the time.
Yeah, and that was like the lightest drug.
Yes, and okay, so who canceled Star Trek? I did a little research into this. There was a really good IO9 article, which basically just reports on this book. There was a trilogy of book series that went the most in-depth into the history of Star Trek ever, of the first series. And the explanation of who canceled Star Trek is a difficult one. One, the third season is way worse, and it had a stripped-down budget, and Gene Roddenberry wasn't as invested.
Those dumb, like, we're on Roman planet, we're on Nazi planet, we're on gangster planet.
Or a million bottle episodes as well. And so that was one of the problems. But it was also that it was on the Friday night death slot at NBC, which is when nobody watched television then. And so the ultimate person who can be blamed for it might be Jerry Lewis, because they were on the Friday night death slot.
Well, we did kill him.
He was on the Friday night death slot. They wanted to move it to Monday, but they would take Laugh-In slot. And the Laugh-In people said, no, we don't want that. So they thought, well, on Tuesday night, we have a very poorly rated show, The Jerry Lewis Show. We should replace it with Star Trek. And Jerry Lewis said, in my contractual agreement, I have to be on this night. And if you move me to Friday, you will owe me a lot of money. And NBC was like, all right, fine. And they just kept airing it until they canceled it. And so if Jerry Lewis had played ball, Star Trek could have moved to Tuesday and maybe gotten better ratings and had a fourth season. So not Grandpa, but Jerry Lewis is the man who canceled Star Trek.
Man, I didn't know this.
I was very interesting to find that out. This was the first time I'd learned it as well. But
he's kind of like once you get past the impression most people do of him, he's kind of a fascinating asshole.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Lewis, yes. Yeah, it's amazing. I heard these great clips of him from the Jerry Lewis Show where people would try, they would say they just bought something, and he'd always have to one up. He's like, oh, I have that, and I have the next one too. Hmm. Oh, no, my car is so much better than that. It's one of my favorite bits on Animaniacs was how I was introduced to the Jerry Lewis,
like the serious, and that's the serious side. And Freakazoid will always lapse into being like serious Jerry Lewis.
I love the serious Jerry voice he does. Yeah. Like, what is this? What are we doing here? The episode
we've had so much fun here today.
The episode that was Apocalypse Now meets the production of The Day the Clown Cried was incredible.
I was thinking about that. The amount of cultural literacy children had to have to find anything funny. The Simpsons, Animaniacs, The Critic. Yeah. Like, how did we know this stuff? Well, and are kids today expected to know any of this shit?
We're going
to
do you'll be on it, the Laser Time show about the Looney Tunes. You can kind of pick that up through weird osmosis. It loses its reference, its referential quality, and just becomes part of that show.
I can see that.
Well, as a kid, I liked the sound Freudlaven.
Freudlaven.
So Lisa's very lucky that Jessica didn't hide the money better. Like, hiding the church money under her bed was probably a mistake.
My line of the show is what Mo says when he finds it.
That's the collection money.
Oh, yeah, smells like church.
I guess it's obvious what's happened here. Bart Simpson has somehow managed to sneak his bedroom into my house.
That's also great.
Well, come on, use your imaginations.
No, Dad. I did it. It's your classic cry for attention.
Well, young lady, I suppose we brought you home from boarding school a little prematurely.
I was expelled, Dad. Remember the pipe bomb, the glee club brawl? Remember the school chapel collection plate?
Bringing in the sheaves. Bringing
come on,
in the
Dad!
Sheaves.
Attention to me! I'm going there.
And we never see Jessica again.
Yeah.
By the way, that doesn't mean she doesn't pop up in, like, character packs or, like, in the background somewhere. She's never a character
like
10
again. 10 seasons we've never seen.
I like that we get some explanation for... Jessica is just a sociopath, I think. But the lack of attention from Lovejoy and him just completely ignoring these problems, especially when she reveals... I stole from a collection plate before.
The exact same thing happened.
She'd done this crime before, and he still refuses to believe it. That's pretty out there. And that she just like, pay attention to me.
Yeah.
She's just literally screaming at. But I like the concept of like, oh yeah, something can smell like church.
That's true, like incense-y.
Look, that it's bringing in the sheaves.
Sheaves,
yes, yeah.
Not sheep. Just wanted to say that.
Oh yeah, the sheaves.
It's sheave, a bundle of grain.
Is
not
that,
sheep.
Did they sing that when Bart had to be a babysat?
Rod and Todd.
Yeah, Rod and Todd singing. And also,
Iron helps us play.
Yes, and I believe in Ned's shooter fantasy, he's singing
that
as
that's
well.
Right. He's
as
like
he
whistling it or whatever.
Oh, he's whistling it, yes, not singing it. Yeah, so then everybody lightly apologizes to Bart, though not freeing him.
No, he's still strapped up like Hannibal Lecter.
Yes.
Like, don't worry about it. It's okay.
And then we get to the ending, as Merkin puts it in the commentary, and it's true, he wanted no one to learn a lesson here, and so nobody,
because we already shipped
does.
One Springfield Elementary love interest off to a boarding school.
Yes,
just do it again.
It's true. That's stanky.
Come to watch me suffer.
I just wanted to let you know that even though this was a difficult experience, I really learned a lot. I'm a little wiser and a little less naive.
Well, I learned that I can make men do whatever I want.
Well, don't you see, Jessica, then you really haven't learned.
Would you finish scrubbing these steps for me?
Will I?
Hey, Jessica.
Coming.
Poor sucker. It's amazing what some guys will do for a pretty face. Not me, though. Wait till she sees the second-rate job I do on these stairs.
I had to cut it short. He laughs for like 5 seconds.
There's a lot of cackling. Yeah. Again, guys, don't be a doormat.
Yeah.
You won't win any points. You're just...
Will I?
Yeah.
That he immediately proves he learned nothing.
It's like, I learned something. I didn't. And then he immediately unlearns what he learned.
And then Jessica also learned nothing other than she's like, yeah, I can do what I want.
Yeah.
And that she's going to do it with this next guy. And I also love one last compliment to the animators. The way when Jessica says, I can make boys do whatever I want, the way she moves her finger back and forth on the brush is like that is of a manipulative, conniving person thinking like,
it's like
oh,
faux innocence almost.
Yes,
you know?
It's beautiful. And that Jessica probably has murdered someone by this point, or at least destroyed a few men.
In her adult life, I think she's dissolved someone in acid.
Yes. And actually, I get Pretty Poison mixed up with the film Pretty Persuasion, which was a mid-2000s film about a girl who actually does look designed the same as Jessica Lovejoy in a pink outfit with black hair, and she is manipulating everybody just to become famous, and it's all about fame. And in the film, James Woods basically plays James Woods. Actually, he says so many racist things in it that you're just like, at the time you're like, boy, James Woods is a good actor, and I'm just like, I think that's just James Woods.
But is he dating a 15 year old? You gotta make it authentic.
No, I mean, you can assume he wants to fuck his daughter.
I see.
But, but anyway, that was such a great ending. Like Bart's laughter, this is a really great episode.
I love it.
Clear through line, didn't need a beast plot, just beautiful.
Yeah, again, it feels really King of the Hilly. It's a low-key character study with not a lot of antics. It's just very focused on Bart's relationship and Bart not learning anything about relationships, actually.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, so everybody, thank you so much for listening. This has been Talking Simpsons. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts, every Monday at retronauts.com, a new classic gaming episode, and occasionally an episode on Friday. if you're new to Retronauts, I dare you to pick a topic that you're interested in and download that corresponding episode, and you should like it. And you can look for that in any podcast machine or device. Just look for Retronauts. We will be there. We've been there for 11 years, goddammit! And Henry can tell you more about Talking Simpsons Patreon.
Yes, follow me on Twitter at HENEREYG. And, you know, this is supported by patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons, where we do a lot of good work there. And if you want to support us, you get a ton of things that are honestly too long to list. Though, hopefully at this point, if you listen to us on the free feed, you've heard our preview episode of all the great interviews we've been doing recently. Just $5 a month will get you access to literally dozens of hours of content you won't find anywhere else. It's right there. And we thank everybody who supports us. So again, patreon.com/TalkingSimpsons. Chris.
Yeah, you can find all that on leisuretimepodcast.com, yeah, including the show that sort of started it all. But if you like the way we break apart reference here, as of this recording, we haven't done it yet, but we're doing that with the Looney Tunes. It's been a really hard thing to research because, Jesus Christ, we do it on The Simpsons because many of you have seen these episodes without, you know, you weren't born when they came out. Yeah. None of us were born when the Looney Tunes came out, so this has been really hard for me. So we'll see how many we can get for you. It's pretty illuminating that awesome. We think Simpsons invented this style of humor, holy shit, they did not at all. Looney Tunes were doing it in the 30s. But listen to that show, and on 30-20-10, the show that looks 30-20 and 10 years ago to that week in history, mostly pop culture, there is a Simpsons thing brought up, and you're going to hate it.
Uh-oh. Oh,
I bet I will. Well, thank you so much for listening, folks. We'll be back next week with Lisa on Ice. See you then.
Infotainment.